Hello and welcome back to the F24 podcast. My name is David and every week I invite a creative over to my studio in North Acton to talk about their lives and interactions with London culture and creativity. This week I had Charlie Shazer over from Kids Love Ink East. Charlie's been tattooing for 20 odd years and he's a true patron at the art, and he also owns and runs a great parlour off Brick Lane in East London. It was a great interaction with him. I've known Charlie for a few years and predominantly through the graffiti world, but as usual, getting this quality time to find about people's journeys, it was a real eye-opener. Super inspiring. Enjoy. This is F24.
And he happened to be in the main car of Johann Street.
Wow.
One day, playing a stereo with Electro. And I heard it from like two blocks away, so I leg it up there. And it's my buddy Andrew Harrison, and then I met some other dudes because they'd heard it and these kids were breakdancing, and some friendships were formed that day.
Chapter 1, London. We start off in Kingston, West London with Charlie, and we get right into his school life and his parents' choice to leave London and the choices he was given around that time. We get into his interest and how life was for a teenager in London, and also talk about getting into culture, the first wave of hip-hop and clubbing with his crew. And we also hear about his first tattoo experience.
Let's start at the beginning, man. So where are you from?
Well, Kingston. Grew up Kingston, born in Roehampton, 1969, and then moved to Kingston, mum and dad. So that was an awesome upbringing, like, you know, just like being near Richmond Park, all that kind of stuff.
Amazing, yeah.
A little bit of hustle and bustle still.
But a lot of greenery, a lot of nature out there as well.
Yeah, which like I didn't involve my life in up until recently again. It was good, you know. You had to search out stuff you liked, you know. It wasn't, the local interest wasn't that great, maybe. I don't know, yeah, just like riding bikes, whatever, the outdoor stuff. Yeah. Drawing, I mean, I drew a lot.
What was it you were getting into with drawing?
I mean, back then, like, I don't know, I drew since I could, like, sort of five-ish or something. I think I was very shy as a kid and all that sort of
thing. Oh, right, okay, yeah.
And so it was just paper and pencil drawing, it was me. Didn't have to really talk to people while I did it, whatever.
But, so instead of going under the sofa when people came to the house, you could continue doing what you were doing, which was drawing.
Comics or copying comics or drawing. Wicked. Like, and then got to quite realistic stuff like O-levels, which I screwed up, but...
So art went all the way through your whole schooling as well? It just, I mean, like,
yeah,
you carried on drawing?
Wrong schools for it. The second school I went to in Roehampton had an art department where they sort of taught some stuff. There's some screen printing, things like that.
Introduced you.
I just used to sit and draw for myself anyway. And then, like, I don't know, I was kind of bored with that. I wasn't very good at school. I wasn't academic like that. And in the 70s, it was a bit sort of, you just had to learn facts and be good at regurgitating them. So I kind of messed all that up, whatever. And then discovered the little sort of first little wave of hip-hop, I guess. Like, music like changed my life. First Specials album when I was like 12, opened my head up to like different stuff.
So rather than what was...
Yeah, obvious roots. So I was like, okay, I like Two-Tone Madness for fun, but Specials are like, all right, they mean something. Like, I've got to figure that out. Like, what is it?
Yeah.
And it dressed a bit better. I don't know, yeah, that edgy thing. And then...
And you caught that at 12 and you knew that there was a...
I sort of stayed with the Two-Tone-y thing and then got a little bit into, like, 1950s rockabilly, psychobilly kind of vibe through kids at school.
Wow.
Started dressing all like that. And then a couple of years, I guess I was like 13. I don't know, I saw... something before Buffalo Gals video surfaced on TV for the first time. Because that, again, that was one of the second things that changed my life, seeing that.
Yeah.
The whole hip-hop thing. I remember hearing McLaren talk about it on the Tube, that old music program.
Okay.
Like, and he, like, had a deck and he was trying to scratch and explain it. And you thought, like, wow, what is this? Must be some weird punk thing. Like, don't understand it. It sounds interesting.
Definitely intriguing.
There was drip drops of it came over. And then someone must have showed... Buffalo Gals video, and obviously Dondi doing the outline and everything. I was just like, wow.
That sound and seeing
thing, like
that thing.
Deal.
Yeah, the whole thing was in.
Like what gave me a hard on. Like,
yeah. Interesting.
And started just having a go at that.
So this is still in school? Like,
yeah, that was the end of school. I was like, I don't know, 13, 14, I suppose. And then my folks moved to Norway because of my dad's job.
Oh.
I wanted to stay at school with my friends and sort of kicked off a fuss, so I lodged with an old neighbour.
Yeah. Cool. They let you stay?
Yeah, no, I think it was kind of like, just let him, you know, he wants to try, let him have a go.
Yeah.
And obviously, I screwed it up, and school said you've got to do fourth year again. So I went, eventually went to Norway. But
right.
By then, because I was on my own, sort of like doing whatever, so I'd had a little go at like some little stupid tags. I got a little bronze out of Halfords Duplicolor and did this stupid, ugly line work thing in Kingston Precinct when they were building the boots. There was the hoardings.
Okay.
And all these kids used to break and stuff.
So it hit Kingston as well. So there was
the Burbs, and there was this Sutton crew that were really good at breaking. I forget the name, but they had all the trackies and like.
So hip hop was literally coming out of everywhere.
Electro,
yeah.
It was the electro thing. Yeah. It was like a side shoot of the Casuals and stuff. And I was this little sort of 50s weirdo kid in the middle of it. So I did a little few tags and had a go at breaking that day. You know, I didn't get beat up or anything.
Wicked.
And then, like, eventually more hip-hop things came over, and you saw Beat Street and all that, and then you started getting, you know, really was like, all right, and I just kept the graph and the drawing.
And school was just fucking up, though.
And, well, 15, yeah, sort of, because I moved to Norway, and school there wasn't very good. So I think I lasted till I was 16 and then got out. And I was backwards and forwards between here and there.
Yeah.
Went to, like, Esher College for a few months, but got thrown out of there. A waste of time.
Yeah.
Didn't learn anything. And,
education wasn't the key then.
Because the graphic, it was like a rebel thing, and it was like I could do my quiet little shy self within it. Like I didn't really have crews and that. It wasn't until like mid or late 80s when I started meeting people, going Mug Club.
So
and then I met some of the boys and stuff.
A couple of years or so before you go to Norway. You get into graffiti, and then you start tagging the area and drawing.
Yeah, I mean,
and then,
so
yeah, I mean, not to any extent, obviously, but it was, yeah, it was you'd found something that was, well, I love this is what I'm on, I've seen
and
it in a video.
And I was like, wow, yeah. You know, it's different, it's not, you know, it wasn't a teacher saying, like, draw a still life.
Yeah.
And the whole thing of changing the shapes of letters, I don't know, because like, I learned to. You joined up writing before we learned it at school. Like, I don't know, I was just like...
Okay, yeah,
just
yeah.
Got into that whole thing. Hand stuff.
You had an appreciation maybe without realising it. You don't kind of realise at that age, do you? But there is an appreciation for type.
I joined up writing today, and I was like, oh, what, like this sort of thing?
Yeah.
Within the lines, and two lines of the pencil and that, and the big loops.
Yeah.
So
there was that...
The tagging and... I don't know, just really.
And so you go over there, you do a year's education or so out there, and you still got graffiti in your mind.
Because then, like Norway was very tame. It's just before it kicked off.
Yeah. So what did?
So we even did a couple legal walls. Like there was a train station.
Yeah.
Big, like sort of tunnel station. It wasn't a closed off gates and all that. But,
yeah.
I was like, oh, it'd be awesome to paint that. So me and this kid who had no clue about what I was talking about, he just jumped in on it. I drew this thing, and we went up to the Spoorwegen, which is like the London Transport Company.
Yeah.
And somehow we spoke, must have phoned up, and I said, I need to speak to someone in marketing. I don't even know if they even had a marketing department.
But
I showed him the drawing, and I guess he just like felt sorry for us, because we drew this fucking A4 thing.
Yeah.
The rip-off of the Rocksteady crew, Up Rock kind of thing.
Wicked.
But they gave us like a wanner in Norwegian money, like a little proof of like...
You can paint.
Yeah, so we went and did the station.
Wow.
And the trains were and it stayed there for months. No, there wasn't.
Did you get photos?
Other graph kids, and then slowly more kids got onto it, and then it started kicking off. And then
have you seen that painting? Have you got photos of it? Man,
I've
to
got
see
a couple
that
of early things showed up on Instagram through various ads and
people
I know, and I'm in touch with some of the old Norway lot. A couple of things popped up. From
wow.
Just after that era, when I had a clue.
Yeah.
And sort of figured out trying to have a style rather than just copying a Rocksteady crew cover.
That is bloody crazy, though, man. What history for that country as well, like a link into there, like
and,
part into it.
But went nuts with it over there because it was very easy, racking. Like, they had no clue. Just used to dress up and walk around the paint shops or stationery stores.
Would you get other... So you got your friends out there into it?
I mean, I bumped into a load of people who were already somehow cottoning onto it. Because I think there was a lot of... Because it was like a port town. There was American ships came in.
Okay.
And I think I bumped into some people through an old London friend of mine who joined the Navy. And he happened to be in the main Karl Johan Street.
Wow.
One day playing a stereo with Electro. And I heard it from like two blocks away, so I leg it up there. And it's my buddy Andrew Harrison, and then I met some other dudes because they'd heard it, and these kids were breakdancing, and some friendships were formed that day.
Oh my god, that is.
The other people, I couldn't say how they found out about it.
That's a beautiful visual.
Went there very early on and did shows. They loved Break Machine. Remember that old? They were like those three dudes. I'm not even sure where they were from. It's like a really electro rapping. They did a tour, so they opened up some kids' minds to it.
Wow.
But yeah, they had quite, well, they still have quite a thriving graph scene.
That must have been nuts to see it happen in London and then go out there and then see it happen again.
Because, like, the London side was a bit more edgy. Like, you know, I knew, like, until I sort of met the WD, like, I never really went covering because I didn't know anyone. And I knew you can't just sort of roll up there. You just get, you know.
So you knew of the places in London. So, like, 15, 16, you were in London, yeah, before you go away. And so you got deep enough to know about Covent Garden. Mm. You knew about a scene in the city.
Through nightclubs, I think, sort of was aware of stuff and just cottoning on, like maybe like skiving off college and going up West End and seeing people at Covent and obviously the boards.
Yeah.
Jubilee and all those things. And you're just like, oh, right, okay.
This is where it's at. Yeah. There's more to it. And so when you came back, where did you go and live? Did you go and live with another friend?
92, I think it was, coming back from Norway, that came to an end. Came back here, lived in South Acton Estate with my oldest friend in his student digs.
Wow.
Which was terrifying. I used to get chased home, got like mugged on my birthday. Like, just, it was going to a crew meet, we're going to go meet the boys at the WAG.
Yeah.
Walking through the estate, and suddenly, like, 8 kids jump on us, catch a few lumps, and lost my money and stuff.
Fuck.
Got a bit duffed up. But, like, it's like, oh, man. But
and this is 92 acting,
that was,
yeah.
92. Which, yeah, there was that one crap mark thing came from there. Like, it was pretty hairy.
About 2 years ago, I lived near there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, round about. But in the houses area.
Right.
On the other side.
Yeah.
And crossing through was just different worlds. I mean, it's not what it was. Nowhere like what it was. But, yeah, it was. You could imagine.
But, you know, you just like, welcome back to London. It was good because after living in Norway for, like, 4 years on and off, you've got this sort of safe view of life. And
yeah.
Everyone really fucks with you over there. Whereas in London, everyone fucks with you.
And within the culture as well that you've chosen.
Yeah. But I was with the WD, I mean, that 87, that was just when I started going to Norway. I met them.
So you met them early, yeah?
87, yeah. Well, 86, I met Code and Rome at the Mug Club one night. They were just these two dudes. I thought, like, oh, they look like writers. And I think we ended up talking. And then I met, because we used to see Skip doing security. And think, fuck, that dude looks fierce. And then I think I met Drax through Code and Rome or somebody. And eventually, and they were like, oh, yeah, he's in the crew. And I was like, oh, wow, that dude. Like, I could go up to him and go, oh, what's up, man? Like, I'm down with you now.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that was good. And that opened a lot of doors and obviously met a lot more people.
Mud Club was infamous as well, wasn't it? An amazing club.
Mm.
A lot went on down
there. And it was just a mad mix of cultures, music. And everyone, well, I guess some of the psychobillies were on speed. But most people had a few beers.
Yeah.
Spliff or something, or not even, just
chilling,
getting on with it, just happy and enjoying it, because it was a crazy mix of people. Or that psycho Mutoid Waste Company, walking around with all the lit up alien stuff, and it was pretty good.
And was Skip working on that door, or just in general?
Security, Opera House, I think we used to see more.
Yeah,
but they all knew Philip Salon, like I knew him a little bit, not really, just to sort of blag in, but they knew him quite well and used to do all those things. Yeah, man.
And so you met all them, but then you went off. You had to go off to Norway and do your schooling.
Because again, I was just fucking around.
Yeah,
like, I was just concentrating on like fuckery with the boys and had no money, and so I had to run back to Norway to the folks, my tail between my legs, and sort of sort myself out.
Right. Yeah. And when you come back, did you meet up with them lot again? Obviously.
Yeah. Straight back in it, and like then like sort of party years.
Yeah.
We weren't so much.
It was all over London.
We were just experiencing the rest of it.
Yeah.
Which was fun and an education and that. But I stopped, you know, I didn't really draw much, and then was sort of just having retail jobs and just trying to pay rent on bedsits and kind of didn't draw or do anything.
You're just trying to live life.
Yeah.
Basically figure it out.
And I just realised like that was just messing me up. So I was always like tagging a bit still, doing little things. But just got back into it, and then tattooing, which was something. I think I was 17 when I got my first little spray can in Norway.
Wicked. And that,
so I started thinking about that a little bit, maybe, but didn't know anybody.
So
that took a while to meet someone.
The
saga eventually
took a while after that. So 17 was the first tattoo.
I forgot about that because, like, I don't know, I was just growing up or whatever. Tattooing back then, anyway, was like, it was horrible old guys, bikers. You know, he was intimidating the guys, just like 5 minutes, smash you. You know, it doesn't even really look like.
And you drew it, yeah.
Yeah, I drew my little spray can thing, two drips coming out.
Yeah.
So, like, can you do that? It's like 20 quid or something. And you went bat, bat, bat. Probably didn't even know what it was. He didn't even recognise it.
He'd just done the lines. Yeah. Yeah.
He just wanted my money to go and buy cheap speed with and bad beer after. That was in Norway. And there was only like one tattoo shop in town back then.
What made you want to get it?
I don't know, like, because no one in my family has tattoos. The first person I really saw of my age was Cop, who was the old writer Cop,
uh-huh,
from sort of Putney, Wimbledon ways, yeah, one of Rev's boys. And he had, it was really bad, it was a little Mickey Mouse, I think. And we were mucking around one day in the park, and he had this, and I'm like, oh yeah, like, that's cool. But, like, maybe I don't want that blurry Mickey Mouse.
Yeah. Let me think, sort of, yeah.
Forgot about it until my then missus in Norway wanted to get one. So I'm like, all right, I'll draw something then. Like, when got involved in it and did that. And it was like straight away, I'm like, wow, that's fucking awesome. But I don't know how, I haven't got a.
And at that age as well, you can have, you have that like 10 minute dream. Oh, I'd love to be a tattoo artist. But then you're like, okay, where's lunch? Or what am I doing? What do I do to get through this week?
I was like, you know, maybe one day I can do that and make some money. Because I was never that guy, like, at school, I want to be a fireman or a truck driver. I had no clue. I just love drawing.
Yeah.
I didn't have to talk to anyone. I always figured I'll just do something drawing wise, and it gave me that little thing, like the graph thing, like that nudge, like, oh, this is different, get involved in that. But back then, you know, it wasn't like the graph thing was like, oh, I could be like minded like these people. It was a younger people thing. Tattooing was just sour old dudes with the sort of rock biker, you know, whiskey drinking hangover mentality.
Chapter 2, culture. Charlie had a dope introduction to culture. He witnessed the birth of hip-hop in London and in Norway, which must have been nuts to see, and all of this led him to the world of tattoos. He'd been back and forth from London to Norway and made and kept great friends who inspired him to keep going with tattooing and make it a living. We talk about his first tattooing jobs in street shops and what those places were like, and the various places he executed his trade.
So do you think you were seeing a crossover before there was one?
I don't know, I just thought, like, you know, it's, without, I'm not, people you, like me doing it, maybe, yeah. Find a little,
yeah,
I could do my own thing within, yeah, that. I just got to learn how to do it, and I didn't know how to do that. I knew not to go to these kind of guys because they'll just make you sweep the floor and make cups of tea and, like, yeah, teach you shit.
No one's going to give
and
you
a hand. And they all sucked as well. They were terrible. It wasn't about the art form. They were just like really, yeah, tired old motherfuckers. Just that's all they could do. So they just smashed through whatever.
So you, when you're back in London and you find yourself, you get yourself a bedsit. You're working.
And living at various WZ members' houses for and, a while. Which,
yeah, a whole bunch of stuff. So doing a lot of sofa yeah, surfing.
At Robbo's, especially. Oh. But yeah, man.
And partying. What was London like?
I mean, it was a good mix. Like, the house, I got it just before the house thing. I guess the thing turning to house and some of the lads getting into the acid and the house vibe and trying ecstasy and all those things. It just kind of put weird, like, fuzzy angles on it. And we still sort of did our ragtag WD thing. We'd go out as a crew and everyone would get a bit fuzzy and go ministry or whatever. I don't know. It was interesting. And I mean, I wasn't really get fuzzy and talk to people. Like, I guess my shyness or whatever. I just wanted to be with my lot.
Yeah.
Altered States and everything. But it was fun. It was interesting. And, like, I don't know. I guess everyone was just zapped getting on with their own thing. But.
And you were saying, like, shit jobs and.
Yeah.
Yeah, dead-end jobs. So not sorts, really thinking about any future, no, just like getting by, getting
just
through.
Just literally just like, it's like, yeah, can I pay the rent on my bullshit fucking
space? Can I?
Yeah. So I've got a roof over my head and, like, you know, beans and sweet corn on toast, that sort of thing.
Yeah. Those years. I know, I had those years.
It was fun. I mean, like, for real, yeah, I mean, like, I'm glad I went through it. And having to rack food, like, that's one of the bad habits through graft was learning to rack.
Yeah.
But when you're broke, you just rack out everything and then it gets stressful. It's not so much fun. I'm trying to rack a little bit of food for dinner or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know.
Had good to be done. It's part of those years.
Yep.
So how long was it before you got into the... So whatever, what's going on at this time as well, actually, you're painting with WD and you're going out tagging and just doing that WD lifestyle. Is it a whole load of you?
Yeah.
A massive range of different people.
Yeah. And different sides and like different parts, and like there was always central meetups, and then there was all the WRH, like that was pretty close knit, and obviously PFB a bit later on.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, we used to. We dedicated a lot of time to hanging out, and it sort of stayed within the circle.
Wicked.
And it was good, man. As various people filtered through. Yeah.
And how long did it take before you got an introduction back into tattooing? Did you get any more tattoos over that time?
It was Norway again. My friend Christian, through my old friend Pete there, he got to know him, got some ink off him, and he was like, he was more skateboard background, done a bit of spraying, but he was a couple of years younger than me and like sort of my generation, and we eventually met.
Yeah.
I started getting this sleeve done by him, and then him and Saga, because Saga had been tattooing a year.
Saga's in London, yeah?
Yeah, he was in London the whole time.
The writer, yeah.
Because we knew each other on and off since the 80s. And then in those early 90s years, kept bumping into him, and he started getting some proper ink. I was thinking about doing it. I was like, oh, wow, like, yeah, but like, that's your thing. I can't really jump on your thing. And then Christian used to come over and hang out with us and tattoo us, and they both just kicked me in the ass and said, like, stop being an idiot. Just have a go at this and get on with it.
Wow, man. So I was like, all right. Christian would come over and hang out in London with you.
And he'd do little private sessions. We used to work out of Saga's flat in Mornington Crescent above the pawnbrokers. And like that's where I started as well later on, after about a year.
Was that?
And that was amazing.
What, on the block behind the station? The road
it used
that
to
runs
be like
behind...
if you come out the station and went you,
did you go round the
right,
curve?
And walked towards Mornington Crescent, on the left-hand side, there was a pub called the Perseverance. You crossed the little road. It was used to be around the corner from Etch's old spot. Insane. Yeah. But it was above the Maibon pawnbrokers, him and Hitomi. They lived in this, like, two-floor flat. And that's where I did my first one of myself. And, like, that was it. Again, that was probably the third major change in my life.
And when did that happen?
97. I couldn't say when, but 97.
Wicked, man. And so up to that point, it was just working, hanging out.
I was just
fucking
around.
Yeah,
I was trying to do some little graph or artwork commissions, a bit of drawing for a couple of... like Talking Loud, we did a few Galliano billboards, me and Skits, and eventually Snatch helped on one as well. And just winging a few things, but I was stoned and lazy, and just kind of, we were just sort of hanging out. We used to go that Maximus on a Thursday, Soul Kitchen and things like that. The club thing, because it was more specific hip-hoppy stuff back then. But yeah, we went and did that, and that was kind of a bit more, I don't know, I realised I needed to be earning money off what I do, but wasn't very good at that.
And so what did you do? They kicked you up the arse to get on with it.
Yeah.
And then you were just...
And then I realised, like, this tattooing... I was working at Mr. Bongo's by then.
Wicked.
And then it got to a point where I'm like, all right, I've got to stop Mr. Bongo's and just throw myself into tattooing. We'd done 2 years at Saga's flat, just like... getting on with it, tattooing people we knew, friends and friends of friends, like just pushing our own artwork, little versions of what we thought was correct.
Wicked.
And then we had this old Mark Cassidy, RIP, like Mark Gura, he's still ticking, Fine Line Tattoos in Chapel Market, which was a real gnarly street shop, like £25, like, oh, what the fuck off, that's too expensive, wow, like all these kind of people.
Yeah.
Little hearts with a name, you know, really small. Real tattooing. I got a little job in there after Saga had moved on from there. And that's when I really learnt.
Wow.
Like, it's not just in your mate's flat having a laugh with some Stella and a bag of Haribo and a Singer burger
all
after.
All the tools.
It was like, well, no, it was absolutely awful. The shop was falling apart and there was like 50 plus porno mags in the drawer and tarantulas and crickets running around. It was chaos.
Fucking hell.
But it was real. It was real tattooing. It gave me a real grassroots learning, like, shut the fuck up, stop being an arty punts. Because I knew people who were on the other side, my Norwegian lot. And, so I had both sides. But working in that street shop and tattooing real people for real, you know, it was the real life.
How long did you work there?
That lasted a couple of years.
Wow, and it was intense as well. Just
like, you know, like a lot of ignorance, And like no one really cared about the quality of the tattoos. They weren't trying to push artwork because no one wanted it. They just wanted a little £25. Like used to get all these people from the estate coming in. And they're going, yeah, the bloke in the chinky wrote my name in Chinese. I want to get that on my arm for like £20. And he may have just written one of the menu numbers, you know what I mean? The whole thing about it was like, even they're calling it the chinky and the whole thing.
It's one of those chaffle market.
I was getting all the interesting side going to Norway when I could afford to, and working with my friends there.
Yeah.
But getting the grassroots, like, or learning how not to be, but getting experience anyway.
Wicked, man.
And I knew, like, I could figure out a little niche somewhere in between that in London eventually.
A massive learning curve, then.
Yeah.
One of those. One of those ones. You know,
definitely.
It's like a whip every day, but you're going to gain so much.
And, like, you just, like, it's crazy. I mean, like, three people from that shop are dead now. Like, it was a rock and roll lifestyle. It was the pub, Jack Daniels and Cokes. There was no, like, stretching because you got backache.
Yeah.
Just go pub and shoot pool and spend your day's wages on JDs and Cokes and stuff. It was,
start again.
So it's a bit of a sad ending, you know, like, Saga died, Mark Cassidy died, The Apprentice. All because of sort of sideline alky booze things and the rock and roll lifestyle. Suddenly going wrong in that. So, you know, I guess I learned from that also is to
watch yourself with that stuff.
I quite like being alive, it's good, and you know.
And so what happened after that? So that you're there for two years.
and then I got offered to work in Soho at Metamorphosis, which was a piercing shop. They had a spare room. That was at the end of Old Compton Street. That was like 99, I think, 2000. And I used to go Norway as much as I could, but I couldn't always do that. Had to earn money in London, so I took this job. And it was in Soho, somewhere I knew, and it was still familiar in 2000.
Yeah.
And had a couple, 5 years in that basement.
Wow.
The first 3 years were amazing. Like, it was killing it. And it sort of changed, and like things started changing in London, and I think I was getting a bit stressed out about life, and just pissed off, whatever.
Chapter 3, Creativity. After working in various tattoo spots around the city, Charlie goes to the opening of a Scene show at D Faces Gallery off Praed Street, West London. Due to friends introducing him to Scene, Charlie asks him a question he's sure he's been asked a million times, and the answer's perfect for him to start making a plan and keep moving in the direction he's chosen.
And towards the end of that is when I met Mr. Scene, and then all that going to work over there sort of thing opened up.
How did you meet him?
At the show? Outside Institute exhibition.
Mate, I loved that fucking show.
That place was crazy. There. Right. Yeah. I mean, yeah, that was probably part four of one of the bigger changes in my life. And
that was such a treat, man.
Yeah.
It was put together really well.
Yeah.
It was artwork.
And that blew my mind, like,
just
like, phew.
And it was a proper celebration.
Yeah. And it was full of artwork. He hadn't really seen his stuff like that.
Not like that. That's what I'm saying. It was like, wow.
Mm-hmm.
And it also is kind of one of the first shows.
Mm.
One of the first, you know, it was just the beginning of all of that in London.
Yeah. It was. Yeah. And that place being a little off-key off Edgware Road.
Yeah. Good
it's
location.
The old sailor's place. Just everything about that place was insane.
And so you got to chat to Scene there?
Mysterious Al and D-Face, because they knew I was doing my little tattoo thing.
Yeah.
I just mentioned it to him, and we were hanging out in the back one time, and so I'm like, fuck, I've just got to ask. I'm like, so, you know, is there any chance of, like, doing a little... Because now it's guest spot, so can I do a guest spot? There's even terminology for it back then. And it was just like, is there any work going, like... And he was super relaxed, just like, yeah, you know, give us a shout sometime. And I was going over there with a friend for his birthday a couple of months later, so we trucked up there, phoned up ahead, and he's like, oh, like, if I'd known you were coming, I would have got you working today type thing. I'm like, oh, shit. So I was like, all right, I'll be back in a month, and, like, back to London, booked that ticket.
Fuck.
And I had a friend who lived in the Bronx. I said, can I stay with you for a month? Is that right? And just fucking, that was it. Jumped on that and went and did a 3 year stint
out there.
Yeah, I mean, I was
back and forth. But so was that like
But
going to scene, was that like an amalgamation of everything you loved in a way? Was it because
I mean that it was
beautiful tattooing out of there. There's obviously the underlying and obviously scene.
Because that was the bit, scene. Man. Like forget like Futura scene and obviously Dondi, like the three graph dudes. Like it's just like wow. Like Futura for the abstract, scene for just like what hardcore graph is, making it look clean. And Dondi for just like also that, but just the style futuristic well. Style thing. I mean, yeah, now and then it used to hit me. I was like, fuck, you know, I'm a fucking tattoo scene. This is ridiculous. And I'd have my own little like, whoa. But it just made me work harder and I would never work so hard. The tattooing in New York was booming then. It was before Instagram. It was 2005 to 2008 or 2004 to 2008, something like that.
Wicked. I went out there in 2004 and I went to, I haven't got any tattoos, but I went to tattoos. And I just had to see
I just miss you, man. I mean, because he was holding court back then.
And I met someone there called Sham and he signed my book.
All right.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, we've got a King Sham in London. He's like, what? I'm like, man, we've got a Sham. I've still got the signature. But yeah, I remember that. It was wicked.
King Sham, he like, oh man, he's got stories. He can talk.
Yeah.
Because he had tattooed him a couple of years ago. He came by and he got into his conspiracies and tunnel speak, man. That was something else. That's good.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, about to catch up with him.
But the whole New York thing, man, blew my mind. Like, work ethic, like, shut the fuck up, do it. Midday till midnight. Did like some 7 day a weekers.
Was it different to London then? You felt it?
I mean, yes, way up hustles. In the North Bronx. So you're way used, like, I went down to Manhattan once a week or whatever. But the shop was a neighborhood area and it used to be busy, people sitting and waiting, and you just fucking worked. You just got on with it.
Were you getting to do stuff you liked?
Like... So, I mean, it was all sorts of stuff.
Yeah.
Custom things, but I was doing a lot of flash, but I'd redraw it.
Yeah.
Or you're doing, you know, a lot of, I ended up doing a lot of cover ups. Because there's a lot of bad tattooing in New York at that time. I'm sure there still is, but cover-ups is a huge thing even these days. But and obviously I was the English guy, and people remember you. And, I mean, it was amazing,
What an experience, man.
And all I did was, like, I just worked. And my friend who I got to know, he had a martial arts class a minute's walk from the studio, and I got into that.
Wow.
And that was another thing that changed my life, like the fifth thing. So I just went there and did that. Saw a couple of friends here and there, but basically I just went and worked, came back. And it was amazing,
Inspiring, man.
And that, by then I was sort of getting, you know, I was in, 2008, I can't do the math, 10 years ago.
Yeah.
39, just getting to 40, so yeah. And it was time to be like, all right, I'm back in London. Got to try and figure out, I've had all these experiences, got to try and put it together and see... You know, because I never thought I'd get to open a shop. I just ended up in Cheshire Street there because I know Sarah at Urban Species. She's a friend for years. I was going to do the pop-up thing. But 7 years later, like, pow, was still there, man.
Wow, that's amazing.
The shop's a thing.
Yeah, I know Sarah. And her son.
Hash.
So they... it was a shop. It was their shop before, and then you were just going to do a pop-up.
They still had their office downstairs.
Yeah, that's right.
They got the retail, and then they had pop-ups.
Yeah.
Even Bond were in there for a bit, actually.
Yeah.
Because that's where I first met Raf Simo, funnily enough, was outside, which was yet soon to be the shop in a couple of years' time. First time I met him, I'm like, the fuck is this dude? Like some weird French guy, like leaning into my face.
Yeah, really, being extra. Like, full on, isn't he?
Little did I know. Like, yes, Raph. He would end up being Raph Simo. But like, I mean, all things like that.
I remember actually the first time I met you, but we didn't actually meet. I was looking for Josh Stutterby. And I walked in, I'd come up to his studio because it was around the corner of my flat,
Josh,
and you
did
were
his
in
thing,
there.
Man, yeah.
Yeah. And I said, oh hello, is Josh here?
Yeah.
And it was only maybe a year later I met you.
Right,
and
okay.
Thought, oh, that was the guy I saw in Josh's studio. Yeah, that was before the shop as well.
Mm. Yeah, because I was with him at those working rooms, remember, on the canal.
Yeah, I lived just around the corner from there,
So, because he was trying to get to me to... No, he didn't do a full apprenticeship sort of thing, but he had a go... And through a couple of... There's two people I ended up meeting him through. But yeah, helped him, and I said, look, I'll help you get better at tattooing if you let me work from your work studio.
Yeah.
It was a bit awkward because I didn't realise he shared it with two other girls. I think now and then they just come in and think, who the fuck's this dude? Like, but, you know, it worked out and that was amazing. And then I got the shop thing and I'm like, come on, dude, let's go for this. And he was a bit like, oh, I'm not ready. So I was like, all right. I think I did the first 8-9 months on my own.
Building the business.
Yeah. And just 7 days there, I was just like, right, and managed to keep it going, yeah. I mean, the rent was cheaper then as well. So, and there was enough, because there was more Londoners in London then, if you know what I mean. Like now it's, most of our customers are 60% like Euro tourists, French and Spanish,
yeah,
Italian.
Are they coming to see like you
and
the
some of them, a lot
particular.
Of French people know about us because we tattoo so many fucking French people, which is awesome. Mm. But the word's spreading, but most Londoners or most people we tattoo, people who live in England, say, come from out of town. Because a lot of Londoners have moved the fuck out because they can't afford it.
You can't be affording, can
it? Which is fair enough.
So the first 7-8 months, you grinded by yourself?
Yeah.
And...
Yeah.
What were you thinking? Like, were you like, right?
This I don't is know. It. I was just like, wow, like,
you I can
know,
do this.
I was like, well, I'm in it. I guess my thing is.
You'd never run a business before.
No, I know. I mean, I still live and learn about that. You know, I didn't learn such skills at school like that. But I was just like, all right, I've got this. Let's just keep going, man.
Yeah.
I mean, I got it tattooed on my leg in French from that film, La Haine. Like, so far, so good. It's like my life motto. Deal with it, and so far, so good. Still here, and perseverance.
Yeah. Good mottos to carry, man.
Because, like, you know, like...
Kind of ones that will get you through those downs, as well as the
Yeah, because there is, you know, there's tons, and the pressures, the shop, and, you know, I don't know, like...
Mate, shop life's a fucking... It can be a nightmare. It's so rewarding, it's so lovely, it's a beautiful thing to be doing. And especially with what you're doing, which is bringing people in who will come in and work like as part of this team and, you know, build up, and you're training people, you're giving people opportunities. Like, it's a very rewarding, beautiful. You get to be creative. But that fucking key in the front door.
Yeah. That's the thing, man.
That bill, those licenses.
We had this kid, like, even that, in the end of the first year, Josh and Raf were in-house. Raf was still apprenticing. And it was a quiet Friday, and I tattooed this kid. He turned out to be a local crackhead. I thought he must have taken something, and he was getting this little neck tattoo, and it was 60 quid, and I'm like, oh, this is going to be weird. And I was kind of prepping myself for some kind of, you know, and he was like patting the pockets at the end, like, oh, I haven't got the money, this crazy South African kid. So I'm like, come on, let's go cash point, and like march him around the cash point holding his arm, and then he's trying to style it out and everything. So I'm like, oh, he's trying to diddle me. He didn't have any money. He hasn't got any money in the cash point. And I'm just like, what? Like grilling him for a little bit. And I take his phone and his so-called wallet. So you get these back when you bring me the 60 quid. And don't see him for a couple of weeks. Well, he came back that night and he's banging on the windows and all this stuff. This is before the red shutters.
Right.
And then about a week later, a couple of the windows have popped one morning. Like, I roll up, and I'm just like, what? And then a week later, there's pink paint thrown all over the shop front. And, like, another window broken. It's just like, wow, like, what's going on here? Like, is it a rival tattoo shop? But they don't act like that. All those sort of, you know.
What is that?
Yeah, well, it turns out, I mean, and then there was two arson attacks. This kid... After the first arson attack, he set fire to the front of the shop. We built the shutters by then, and they're all scorched and everything. And obviously, it's residential above, so there's crazy police. Sarah from overseas, she's like, right, we're going to go legit on this. Phone the cops, detectives. We had like three different crews of detectives. We set up a little video camera. Like, ASAP helped with that. It was all that undercover shit. It was hilarious, but terrifying at the same time because didn't understand what was going on.
Yeah.
And then we got the second arson attack.
And you're still open every day?
Well, yeah. Like, we had some late openings twice after the attacks, trying to repaint and sort of... I think there was one day when we didn't open because the shop smelt really bad of burnt and stuff. But he forced the letterbox. I mean, I nailed the letterbox shut thinking this kid's going to try and piss through the letterbox and I'm not cleaning up this fucking kid or whoever it was. On the second video, because the cameras were working for that, you could see him pushing the letterbox, trying to pour petrol in. And this was all because he felt humiliated, because he ended up paying as well. He came back to the shop like a month later with another crackhead trying to think it was me on my own. I was on my own first time. But when he came back, Raf, Josh were there, and we were tattooing these four Aussie rugby players. So it was just a shop full of dudes. And we all just sort of, like, everyone's back went super up immediately. And we're just like, and he's trying to be all itsy, and he's all edgy. And he felt humiliated. That's why he did all the fucking... Yeah.
Did he admit
arson attacks? And the police never got him for it, but it was a whole thing. It was crazy.
What a fucking thing to deal with, man.
And the second attack was like 2 days before my girl's birthday, and we woke up at 3 a.m. with Sarah going, it happened again. I'm just like, what? So that was just like, wow, like why? But it's like the dealing with, like, if you have something and you put it out in the public arena, you know, all it takes is one freak who's got a chip on his shoulder.
Yeah. I had my shop windows got like, popped five times.
Oh, wow.
In one of the shops, the one at the middle one, five times in 4 years. Mm. And one time they threw a fucking massive granite block through.
Oh, wow.
And I couldn't even move it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, who the fuck
took a whole bunch? Right on three, lads.
Literally. It's so annoying. It's so jarring. Yeah. Like,
it's a personal attack.
Yeah, I mean, that must have been scary, man.
Forcing the letterbox. The fire thing. The window's okay.
Windows paint, you're like, fucking hell, all right, mate.
And that's fixable.
Yeah, all right, mate, calm down.
Fire, like, kills people, and it's residential above. So he was well wanted, but his crackhead life got the better of him.
Isn't that nuts, though, man? Like, one day he was just sitting there, took a hit, and was like, I'm going to go and get a tattoo, I'm not going to pay for it. And then the obvious turnout happens. He has to get...
Because he'd gotten away with things in the neighbourhood. I heard from other retailers and the pub down the road, they said a few things. Like, he'd walk into the pub, drink someone's beer, and then smack them when they were like, oi, you know, he's a chancer.
Wow.
But for once, it didn't go his way. Like, not that I'm such a tough guy, but I'm just like, I need that 60 quid, man. Yeah. Like, I've got 1,800 quid's worth of rent to pay back then. It's gone up a lot more since then,
yeah,
I'd say. But so I'm going to get my 60 quid one way or another, even if it's your phone. Like,
there's no way
you're not getting away with it,
you
man.
You can't let it run.
No.
You can't let it. I remember a guy coming into my shop, a crackhead in Brighton, came in one day, and I can't remember if I see him or not. When he put a T-shirt in the bag, and he walked past the counter, and I looked, and I was like, "That's a pink T-shirt. It's hand painted." So I went up to him, I grabbed him at the door. He's like, "What are you doing?" I said, "Mate, that's my fucking T-shirt." Mm-hmm. And I grabbed the bag. He's like, "No, it's not. No, it's not." I said, "I took it out," and I was like, "Where'd you get this from, then?" And it's hand painted. It's only available in my shop. Oh, brother, that's brilliant, man. I was just testing you. I was like, get the fuck out of here, you cheeky bastard.
My guy wasn't smart enough for that.
Yeah, I was lucky. This guy just tried to charm his way out.
No, but like the thing of, I don't know, but anyways, that's the life most ridiculous shopkeeper thing. Yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't even a rival tattoo or, you know what I mean?
No, because I've been through, like, there's the whole Hell's Angels and, like, that fine line place I talked about, the owner of that, she used to be married to the late 90s top dog, Hell's Angel. She broke up with him and they let her open her shop. It was all that sort of... Back then, it was a thing. It was part of their world, you know.
Right. You had to kind of get a license from them.
You had to sort of be verified and they'd be like, all right. And when I got offered the Old Compton Street job, those guys were around the corner, which is now Frith Street Tattoo, and I had to phone this guy Marcus up. I'm like, oh yeah, it's me from around the corner. Used to work for Michelle, da da da, and they'd be like, and I'd phone back 3-4 times. By the end of it, he's like, ah, that's all right. You know, but just to sort of, they want to flex and be like, you know, you're sort of stepping on our turf
a little bit.
But because I had the in from working for Michelle, it was just like, they needed to growl at me. I'm like, all right, cool.
What a mad business, man.
But now it's different, like, you know, like, the shop down the road from us opened up, no one, like, we saw the guys, me and Raf and the boys be out the front, and, like, it was a big, sort of 6'8" tall guy, covered in ink, who came and helped decorate and open the shop, this crew from wherever they're from, but couldn't even give us a nod, like, hello, neighbour, like, we're opening up, let's be, you know, it's like, okay, cool.
Okay.
So
it's a bit of a different world, then.
You can just do, you know, open on next door, like, if they could, but
not shake hands.
I don't, you know, again, learn to not think about that. They do what they do. I just worry about what happens in our little four walls. Yeah. And you know, I'm so not really part of the tattoo world. Yeah. Like, it's just kids love ink now. That's that.
So it's changed that much that you just feel like this is.
I mean, I was never. I guess again, it stems from shyness and sort of trying to hold it to my own and my little world of whatever I'm in. But I'm not part of the scene.
Oh, maybe
it's
also
all a bit
because
ego fuel. It's like graph, you know.
But you saw a different scene. You saw a different.
Oh, I just tried to. I just tried to find me in what it was.
Yeah.
And like you know, I just figured there'd be some people who'd be into it, and you know, I'm not trying to. I'm trying to be good with it and push good work or. And, that's what it's about, you know. It's an art thing, not just tattoos. Like, you can get that if you want it, but
I mean, yeah, Josh, that'd be amazing.
Some quality control and like having morals with it, man, and doing the right thing for people. And it is a business. You want them to come back, you know. Got to keep paying the bills. But yeah, we sort of offer our own little brand niche market thing. You know, we're not sort of don't really follow the trends. We have to do whatever the trend tattoo is. I
mean, yeah.
But we still do it our way and, you know, not doing stupid stuff on people. We say no a lot because you get all these, like, non-tattoo people trying to get tattooed and they think they know because they've seen an Instagram picture.
Yeah.
And you explain why it's not going to work and look good in 2 years, but they're just like, fuck off somewhere else and maybe they do it or not.
Yeah, that must be quite a thing to carry as a tattoo artist.
Because you can't, it's not like you say you've got to read this, like, bio of my 21-year career before you talk to me about tattooing. Mm. People don't get that. It's because it's so easy access, TV, Instagram, you know, like people, it's like normal. You used to have to seek out the tattoo shop and you're a bit like, or like, you know, you knew you were going into a tattoo shop. It was, you sort of psyched yourself up for it and hoped it went well. And, you know, like my first experience, all those sort of things.
It
should be that, but
no,
it's not even anything in between ground.
No.
It's just like service industry, like draw me this thing and tattoo it on me. I've seen it on telly.
Yeah.
It doesn't work like that. The customer is not always right.
No, not when it comes to creative. Especially when they're not creative.
But they think they know, like, the power of a photo on a phone. And some of these things people show you are Photoshops. It's not even a real tattoo. Mm. And then they're just like, you know. But it is what it is. It's a very commercial business. But perseverance and, you know, when reality TV finds something else to go make shows about, there won't be so much. It won't be part of everybody's day so widely.
It's become more than the cool thing then.
Mm.
Yeah.
I mean, like people buying kits online and doing their DIY stuff about it and hand pokes at parties and see all these videos in the shop. It's just like, oh boy. I mean, it's all going to be disastrous and infections, you know. But people think they've got their own little route in this. Like, you don't have to go and spend lots of money. Because it hurts. I can see, like, it's not important to people. You know, if you go to a professional, good, artistic tattoo shop, it's going to take a long time, it's going to hurt a lot. You have to spend quite a lot of money on it. And the people who aren't prepped to do that, these sort of non-tattoo folks, you know, they don't think about those things. Or they just double-tap a screen, it's like, I'll watch the shows. I think they know.
Yeah. Well, you're right then. I think it's just like when TV and media decide to move on to the next is when you'll be able to breathe again a bit more.
And once the attention's off it and, like, most the general focus will go to whatever else and we'll still be there. The perseverance thing, that's why it always comes back to that. Like, whatever the waves are, we're still there, man.
Yeah.
Soldiering on.
Yeah.
Doing good work.
Crazy, man.
Yeah, it's funny.
Do you do any tattoo conventions or anything?
Some of the guys at the shop have.
Yeah.
That's a whole kind of meat market-y sort of world, and it's a bit buddy-buddy backslapping, you know, the Grapevine network thing.
Okay.
Which, again, I've sort of never really got too involved in.
Yeah.
All I think about is the shop. That takes up, you know, most of my brain power.
Wicked.
It'd be nice to do them. I have done them in the past. My friend Christian did one in Oslo in 2000, which was amazing. Did another one in Scandinavia soon after that. That was super fun, but Yeah, I don't know, like when it's, I don't know, yeah, if we just get on with the shop.
Yeah, tune into the shop.
Shop life, yeah.
Wicked. Who's there at the minute?
Got Mario, he's doing his thing, Twist. Raph, when he's in town, we got Don. Jay and Sophie, they're just moving on, they're about to move on. So yeah, it's just us lot, yeah.
Wicked.
And everyone does their little different days and stuff. But it's cool, yeah. Again, it's the core members. We'll bump into someone. Like, we're not rushing to get someone in because we want to get the right person, man. You know, it's a small little world. You've got to kind of fit in and,
you know. It's a family, isn't it?
Yeah.
You've built a little family.
And we just haven't met that weird little cousin yet. But yeah, we're going to keep trying, man, and it's just getting, you know, like, we'll just take the weight and get on with it.
Yeah.
Everyone's ready, willing and able and understands the end goal, which is, you know, that means we just long it out, us guys, a bit longer for a bit, and so be it. But we'll meet someone at some point.
Yeah.
And eventually, I guess, the shop will have to move at some point when the rents go crazy. We'll see where we end
just
up.
Off Brick Lane, aren't you? So.
Yeah,
changed dramatically around there in the years you've been there.
Certainly has. The amount of businesses that have come and gone, like, it was like 40 the other year, but some of them were pop-ups, but
yeah,
half of them tried to have a long-lasting business, and for whatever reasons, or if it's just, you know, it's hard. There's not much love for independent business in London. It's crazy corporate, like Soho. Like, what happened to Soho, man? Wow.
Capitalism is meant to be a back and forth. It's meant to be a bartering and bargaining thing. It's not meant to be killing. And what's happening is the big corporations are just coming in and just wiping areas out. Like,
No,
we're meant
Costa
to have...
Costa Coffee.
Yeah, everywhere.
Pret a Manger, even though we do go there most days. But
that's the city life. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
Because the sandwich shops are shutting.
Like, you don't see a good sandwich shop anymore. There's a couple.
There's a couple, but I mean, you know what I mean? It was...
They're not that good, that's why we don't go there. It's
That's London. So have you thought about where you'd move to if you had to?
I don't know, I'd like to say, because if you go too far off the beaten track, people forget and they lose the will to travel, especially because we've lost a lot of, like... We still have a lot of regulars and people who would, but... is it the word transient? London's so transient, like, that people sort of forget, and like, if you're not there, all of a sudden they'll be like, oh, just got the road. I mean, that's happened to me a lot over the years, like, especially when I went to New York, like, halfway through a few sleeves where you'd think the person would wait, but I just never heard from them again. Maybe some other dude finished it, or I don't know.
It's a tough game.
Yeah.
Definitely a tough game.
But then again, people get smaller tattoos that they get in one hit now, so that's changed like that as well.
Is there
in
more
London
of that at the minute? Yeah. That's the
people
thing.
People sort of have these little collages of small bits rather than...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know.
Rather than full pieces. Yeah.
Which, you know, I can see that.
Yeah.
Again, it's the expense thing, and people fit in a little one. You know, it's hard to dedicate a whole arm.
Yeah.
You know, like, maybe 2 years of your life, and... You know, it could be... I mean, I know a guy who spent $3,000 on a tattoo.
Yeah.
That's a lot of, you know, you've got to have spare monies every couple of months to...
Keep that going and finish it.
Which is fair enough.
Amazing. So it's continuous for life, though. It's a definite...
But we're in it to win it, and, you know, like look after yourself. Like, try, like, with Raph and Marcus, you know, we're all trying to be healthy and stretch, and, like, yogas and foam rollers... and not doing that, you know, Jack Daniels and Coke down the pub every night, drinking away the pain. Because it does, it messes your back up. It's like any, you know, artistic endeavour you spend a lot of years on. It affects your body.
Does the machine shake as well?
I use a very different, a rotary one now. No, it's my stretching hand I get the more, because that's tense because you're pushing on the skin. So it goes up this arm and into my neck. Yeah. And you might sit at a weird angle if I have to stand and tattoo. Because in the early years, you lean... You know, you're that close from the person's skin, you're just trying to be like, what the fuck am I doing? And over the years, like, you get your...
Position, but still, it's not...
I've already done a lot of damage.
It's not fully comfortable. So there's a...
Yeah, it kicks my ass. I have to do my exercises and... So, you know, but you know, we've got benches and things, you know, it's not, you've got people twisted up in chairs like it used to be, old office chairs that are all broken. We have decent furniture and try and maintain.
That's a beautiful salon, man. It's gorgeous, isn't it? It's lovely.
It's a weird little space. It's very small. Wish we had a bit more room.
Yeah,
it's a little backyard, which when the weather's nice, like, that saves all our lives. You can go and hang out.
Yeah.
And it seems to attract good customers that aren't, you know, too annoying or aggressive or whatever. But yeah, no, people think we're the other shop down the road. They don't always read the window. And it says no piercing, but we get asked if we do piercing pretty much every day still. But, you know, people that walk in the door are nice and, you know, it's good. Yeah. They sometimes have these cuckoo ideas, but we say no, but we give them good reasons why. They seem to understand. It gives off good vibes, a little creative, small workspace. That's what it is, man.
Right. Wicked, man. Well, Charlie, thanks for that, man.
Oh, yeah, very awesome. It's cool to sit here and chat, man.
Dope journey, man.
Never done anything like, listen to a lot of podcasts, you know.
Yeah.
And the sharing of conversation and information, it's good. It's better than watching Big Brother or...
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
It is. That is dope, though, man. It's a nice, you know, way to... Oh, it's good to hear how that story all came together. Mm. And
it's a bit like, you know, it fell into a situation, but it's just trying to, you know...
It's the life of the creative, though, isn't it? I mean,
you never know. It's not written. I'm not, you know, it's not a salary guy. It causes a few home stresses, but, you know, the payoffs are good, man.
I fully can't. I don't know, man. It feeds so much.
Yeah.
Yes, in real life, it's hard. The bills are hard.
Yeah.
The everyday life part is hard.
It's a responsible bit. And you've got to focus as much on that as on the other bit. Mm. But at the same time.
Yeah. Nothing else can feed you much. No. There can't be anything else that feeds you like that.
Mm.
You know, and it's hard to drink. Well, just can't walk away. It's always on.
Yeah, man.
Wicked. Thanks, Charlie.
Big ups, man. Awesome.
Charlie was born to do this. His love for art is so strongly visible on him, obviously, but also in his words. He's definitely a creative soul. Again, another great art-backed story. I really appreciate Charlie sharing that with us. Big up the Kids Love East crew and, of course, our good friends, the French crew, EC. Big up Aseb, Simo and Nice. We love you guys. Catch you all next week. You're not going to believe the lineup coming, so I'm not going to tell you. Just keep listening. Until then, love your city and love your culture. This is F24.